And what an incredible day, again, to have Gene Axius, Senior Vice President for Global Thought Leadership from AARP with us today. Gene, welcome.
Well, thank you so much, George, for having me. How are you?
Gene, you know, we're all in this moment in time. You know, just a few short months ago, we were 3,500 odd some days from the 2030 marker for achieving the 17 global goals of the UN. And a few months later, we're all in a pause, in a sense. The entire planet is in a pause in terms of travel, in terms of work, in terms of many aspects of what were in January. And here we are now, almost in June. The world has changed
quite a bit. Right.
And your mission is to challenge conventional wisdom and establish norms, especially as it relates to older adults, right? And that these new possibilities for older adults hold promise.
Absolutely.
Especially for strengthening societies, expanding economies, and improving life for all ages, which I think is just an incredible mission. And often these older adults, as we've seen time and time again, are stereotyped and reduced to a singular narrative in the digital world, especially. And what do you see as common myths or outdated beliefs about older adults?
Well, George, first of all, thanks again for the opportunity to be with you today. I think this is such an important conversation. And I think you're absolutely right that things have changed quite a bit. And I think part of what we need to think about is what are the opportunities that this time is presenting to us? What are some of the lessons that we're learning from this pandemic? And what are the solutions that we need to cultivate in order to ensure that once we get through this time, that we will be much better off? One of the things that I think is very clear, particularly for us at AARP, is really to challenge outdated beliefs and stereotypes, particularly around older adults. As you can imagine, in general, there is these negative perceptions about older adults. And I think that COVID-19, in many ways, is challenging some of that. One of the misconceptions and stereotypes is the fact that older adults are not comfortable with technology, that older adults don't know how to use apps, that they are fearful of technology. And I think that what we're seeing through COVID-19 is the fact that more and more that's not true. That in fact, older adults are comfortable with technology, that they are able to adapt, that they are doing Zoom calls and FaceTime and using technology to connect with their grandchildren, with their children, with other family members. I also want to say that it's very clear that we are also seeing the resiliency of people over the age of 50. This negative stereotype that older adults are, it's about decline, that they're liability, it's simply not true. Older adults are living longer, they're striving and thriving, and they want to provide value and roll up their sleeves and help our societies in very meaningful and significant ways. They want to be partners in their communities, and they want to be, they want to help.
And, you know, you've just highlighted, you know, the mission that you're working on daily, which is profound, Gene. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing today is also an incredible spotlight on inequality. Older folks and across the spectrum, you're seeing all of the inequality highlighted across the planet. What are you seeing, and how can we take a lesson to address where we're at today and what we're seeing?
So there are two big trends I think that's critically important for us to kind of look at with regards to COVID-19, and there are several. One is the fact that how this has disproportionately impacted older adults, particularly those living in nursing homes and long-term care facilities. And that is just not a U.S. problem. That is a global problem. When you look at some of the starting statistics that are coming out of long-term care facilities in Europe or Canada and some of these other countries, as well as within the U.S. and the number of deaths and tolls. I think within the U.S., we're upping close to 30,000 residents who have passed away as a result of COVID. What I'll say is this, is the fact that COVID-19 did not create these inequalities or these issues. COVID-19 has laid them to bear for us to see. These issues existed prior to COVID-19, and it's just exacerbated as a result. And I think we have two options. One is that we can go through this and create what I refer to as patch-like solutions. So you're just patching things up. Or we can really be bold and be courageous and really think about how can we reimagine our future in a way that really puts older adults, their families, their communities in the center of our redesign. And I think that's going to be key. I think that's going to be key moving forward for us to really think about what does it mean to live a life of dignity and purpose across the lifespan? What does that mean to be valued and to be able to contribute across the lifespan? And how do we ensure that our systems and the options that we have are in place to facilitate that? And I think that's a conversation that we need to have. I think that conversation needs to happen across industries, across sectors. And I think we all need to be involved in that. So there's a collective responsibility that comes to these that we have to bring to this conversation, as well as what we are going to do from an individual's perspective in order to help solve some of these dynamic issues. Another trend that I mentioned is that we're also seeing a disproportionate impact on vulnerable communities, whether that is communities of color, or low-income communities. And again, that too is not just specific to the United States. And I think we need to really kind of step back and say, what are the lessons we're learning from COVID-19? The beautiful thing is that we're seeing people roll up their sleeves across generations, across income brackets, to really say, you know what, we're in this together. COVID-19 has impacted and affected us all in various ways. And I always say that I think in many cases, we're all grieving in some way, either because of the fact that we've had someone or we know someone who has lost their life to COVID-19, or because of what used to be the yesterday, the things that we took for granted, the ability to go to the mall, the ability to go to the coffee shop, the ability to go get a haircut. You look nice, by the way, George, so you're going to have to tell me what you did. You know, really kind of thinking about that, right? And as a result, we have to kind of reimagine what we want to be as a society moving forward. And I think that now's the time during this pause for us to really reflect on that.
That's right. That's right, Gene. And you know, what I like about your leadership style is that you always mention being bold and being courageous. I've heard you say that many times, and I really like that because you can't do any of the rest to affect change and implement change and create change without being bold and courageous.
Right.
And yeah.
You know, I think that's what's going to be required. I honestly do think when you think about a lot of the traits that we're going to need leaders who are bold and who are courageous. Recently, the CEO of Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan Chase sent a letter out to his shareholders. And in that, it was a call to action. And he laid to bear. He highlighted even in his letter that COVID-19 has really illustrated the stark inequities. And that these inequities has long existed prior to COVID-19. That there's been so many people living on the edges of life. And as we kind of think about what we're seeing, and is what he put in his letter, is that we all have a responsibility to really think about how can we invest, how can we act, and how can we ensure that we all are better off at the end of the day.
You know, you mentioned Jamie Dimon. I cite Jamie a lot because he is an example of bold and often courageous leadership, especially on issues that are of such utmost importance as we're discussing today. And the work that you're doing each and every day, Gene, is parallel to that, because you're helping to address, to highlight, and to solve so many of these intractable issues that not only the United States is facing, but that the planet is collectively facing. I think that's an important distinction. It's a similar distinction to where we are with the global goals of the UN. The global goals of the UN, the MDGs, their predecessor, were really focused external to the US. They were developing countries. They were somewhere else. But what we see with the Sustainable Development Goals is that all of the issues contained therein apply to the United States of America as well, to your backyard, to my backyard, to everyone's backyard here in the United States and abroad. So it's a collective experience.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, all of the conversations that we're having are tracking alongside what you're saying. It's incredible to see that bold, courageous leadership like that of your CEO, Joanne Jenkins,
yes,
who is relentless in talking about the inequality, and relentless in terms of talking about, you know, the older person as, and the stereotypes that you just alluded to that are pervasive in certain areas. And so I'd like to ask you the questions: how is your work helping to support or challenge these myths and misconceptions?
Well, you mentioned Joanne, and as an example of bold and being a fearless leader, and that is so true. She is such an inspiring person, a leader who has really infused a sense of purpose and a great sense of innovation with respect to the work that we're doing at AARP. Her work around disrupt aging, really helping us in our society really think about some of these negative stereotypes and some of these outdated beliefs, and why it's so critical for us to confront and disrupt those mindsets and shift those attitudes in a way to really ensure that we can help everyone and empower them with the tools and the resources that they need in order to live the life that they've designed for themselves. So between the work of Disrupt Aging, as well as the work that we've been doing around the longevity economy, you know, part of the effort is really to showcase the value and the contributions of the 50 plus population. We released a report called the Longevity Outlook that looks at the economic value of the 50 plus population. And what we found was that the 50 plus population spent roughly around $8.3 trillion in 2018. And if you were to look at that in by 2030, it'll be roughly around 28 trillion. So you have this tremendous opportunity, particularly with this aging population, both in terms of the economic value that they provide. If you were to just look at the economic contributions as its own country, it would be the third largest country in the world, next to China and the US. That's huge. And we also know that as part of the economic contributions of the 50 plus, that the 50 plus are also spending a lot of money on technology. In fact, the 50 plus population spent $140 billion in technology in 2018. And if we were to project that out to 2030, 2040, 2050, you're looking at a six time fold by 2050, about $647 billion. So it's significant, that type of work. And we do those type of reports to really showcase the value of the 50 plus population and to work with industry leaders to really to help them not only see the economic value, but more so the moral value in terms of really looking at the humanity of people and to challenge their own assumptions of what they think old age look like. And to really create products and services and to design products and services, or to even show images that really show that this population is growing, that they're aging, that they're living longer, that they are vibrant, that they are contributors, and that they're not a liability. In fact, they're a huge asset to our economy. and everyone benefits as a result of that.
And, you know, this report cites incredible data. Mm-hmm. I mean, the numbers that you just highlighted are just staggering. And I think it's eye-opening for folks that have those, you know, preconceived notions that those 50 plus perhaps are not as astute in technology, maybe don't purchase as much technology, are not as active within technology. And so how would you, if you were a business, how should business look beyond these stereotypes and recognize that there are just incredible, mind-blowing opportunities with working with an aging society? What would your advice be there based on your research and work each and every day?
Sure. So there's a couple of things to that, George, and I think that's a great question. And when we look at 2019, 51% of older Americans purchased some form of technology. The top purchases, if you think about it, was smartphones, computer and laptops, smart home technology, smart TVs. 91% of people over the age of 50 have a computer. 70% have an iPhone or some type of phone. And then we know that 94% of all people over the age of 50 are extremely comfortable with technology. I think that part of the advice and part of the conversation that we're having with our colleagues in the technology space is really to showcase why it's so critically important to think about their customer base. And we've had a great opportunity to actually go to CES to really have a range of engagements there where Joanne, our CEO, has actually has been a keynote speaker. And we've had a tremendous amount of presence throughout CES with that in mind, in part because of the fact that if a business is truly consumer centric, then it's critically important for our technology, the technology sector and industry, to really think about the changing composition of their consumer base. And it's not just the fact that older adults are using technology more, but they're also purchasing technology, as I indicated before. And they're not only purchasing it for themselves, they're purchasing it for their grandchildren, they're purchasing it for their families. So this is really an imperative. To really think about how do we start to create products and solutions that really meet the needs of a changing population? And what assumptions do we have in our mind about the image of aging that might impact the design of the products that we create? And what do we need to actually start to do to start to change that in a very meaningful and significant way in order to not just ensure that your customers are happy, but more importantly, and equally importantly, that as a business, you're still around. You just can't ignore this market.
Such a great point. And I think it's a great point because business, you know, mirrors what typically society is mm-hmm. leaning toward. And I think you highlighted Jamie Dimon with JP Morgan earlier. I think you need the leaders within these businesses and industries to lead, to step up like Jamie does and often does and has and others to say, here's what's important, to set that tone. As I mentioned in my recent Forbes piece, setting the tone is critical. It's a critical component of leadership. And you know, it's like you're beating the drum, you're constantly saying, and it's not a euphemism. It's very, very important. And it's a critical element to that. And so what do you think the private sector response to an aging society should be?
That is a great question. It's one that we've been focused on, particularly with the work that we've been doing around living, learning, and earning longer. We know that people are living in are aging and they're living longer. In many cases, they either want to or need to work. And that many companies are managing 4 to 5 generations in the workplace. That's a plus, that's a benefit. And what we've been doing over the course of the last year with the World Economic Forum and OECD has really been highlighting the benefits and the promising practices and the insights of what does it mean to really foster a multi-generation workforce? And what are the benefits, not just to the workforce, but also to the company itself? Right now, we have a collaborative that we've created with the World Economic Forum and OECD. And the purpose of the collaborative is to foster that age inclusive nature, particularly within the workforce, to really foster a multi-generational workforce so that we can create, invest, and prosper. And what do I mean by that? Private industry in particular, with respect to the future of work and the future of workplaces and workforces, are at the front lines. And given the fact that many people either want to or need to continue working, that companies need to think about how do they leverage and how do they leverage the skill sets and the expertise and the wisdom that comes with an aging population. And what we've learned through these series of engagements is the fact that, in fact, many of these global leaders see the value of an older workforce and a multi-generational workforce. They actually see the value of that. And they are implementing a series of policies and practices that are in some cases ageless, which is great, because what they're doing is they're looking at some of these issues across the lifespan, whether it's instituting caregiving policies within the workplace because someone is either caring for a family member and not putting an age limit to that. We know that there's over 53 million caregivers, particularly within the U.S., and 25% of them are millennials. So those type of policies are key. To add to that is the fact that we have about 28 global leaders that are part of this collaborative who's been sharing insights on a monthly basis, promising practices of how they are managing and fostering their workforce even during this pandemic and what they're thinking about post-COVID-19. And the 28 global companies represent about 1.5 million employees and over $840 billion worth of revenue. And they see the value of creating a workforce that is multi-generational, investing in that workforce, whether that is through a range of policies that are in many ways really ageless, and then also thinking about ways in which they can invest and ensure that people are receiving the necessary skills that they need. Because we're living longer, the model of going to school, graduating, getting married and working in a job for 40, 50 years has changed quite a bit. That, you know, the notion that you just go to school one time has changed because we're living longer. Things are changing so rapidly. And a lot of these global leaders see it and they value it and they really want to support it. So it's not just about simply living longer. I think we all recognize that it's more important, frankly, to live a more healthier and more meaningful life. And what brings you meaning? And that's a question that I think has to be answered at the individual level. But more importantly, I think that employers, private industry, public sector can do a tremendous amount of work to create the ecosystem to help to ensure that people are being able to live a longer and healthier and more meaningful life.
And where do I begin? I think it's just profound, Gene, the work that you and your colleagues are working on at AARP. I mean, we have a front row seat in watching you change the world. But as you describe it today, it just reminds us all in our global audience that this organization, AARP, is helping to truly change the world, in quotes, literally, figuratively. I mean, it's incredible what you're doing. You're setting the tone. You're leading. And so if we were to ask, what are the main, most important issues to be addressed in order to fully harness the power of that 50 plus population, how could we do this while meeting their needs and interests?
Well, thank you so much, George. As I indicated throughout our conversation, when we think about what does it mean to live a life of dignity, purpose, and independence? What does it mean to live a much healthier, longer, and more meaningful life? And I think that we have an opportunity here across us industries and sectors to collaborate in a very meaningful way to create the ecosystem in order to do that. when you look at the 50 plus population, particularly within the US, their economic contributions is $8.3 trillion of economic activity. That is significant. Could be its own country, third world's largest country. In addition to that, what I didn't mention is the fact that the 50 plus provides a tremendous amount of value that is unpaid. Whether it's caregiving for an older adult or a loved one, or caregiving for a grandchild. I was raised, I think I've shared with you, that I was raised by my grandmother for the first 4 years of my life. Or the amount of time that they spend volunteering, and as well as their charitable donations. So I think it's critically important, the work that we're doing, particularly as an organization, to disrupt a lot of these negative stereotypes and to really see people as people and to understand that people are living much longer, that they want to be major contributors, that they want to be part of the solution and not the problem, that the 50 plus in particular is a huge asset and not a liability, that is not about decline, it's about living. And I'm sure we all want to live.
You know, Gene, you know, I'm often not at a loss for words, but you just, you know, described it in a way that I think our global audience will take away so many incredible insights, perspectives, and most importantly, lessons for implementation.
Absolutely.
I think if you heard anything today and during this interview, it's an action plan. It's an action plan. It's an awareness building moment. You have to be aware. You can't just go through this journey without being aware of what is happening around you. And when you then become aware of that, you must take action.
That's exactly right.
Gene Axius, Senior Vice President, Global Thought Leadership, AARP, Changing the World, Leadership Defined. Thank you.
Thank you.